Hospital on WOR, and stay tuned now for the Gene Shepherd Show. This is WOR New York, 710 on your dial.
Hi, this is Big Charlie here, and tonight we have a very peculiar program for you. This is one way of putting it. It is a taped record of an kind of an extraordinary event that occurred March 2nd, 1970. You probably recall that we were having a big press conference. Well, you're going to hear the tape of a press conference that involved 600 editors and reporters from various high school and college newspapers all over the East. And it was held at the Overseas Press Club. And we're going to get that rolling right now. It's March 2nd, 1970, and the time is 5 p.m.
Well, I want to tell you a little thing that happened today. All day long at the station, there were thousands of phony kids calling up. All of them were saying, hey. thousands of kids that were calling up, and they'd say, look, the guy that's coming from the Great Neck High School is actually he's not a real reporter. I'm the real reporter, so let me in. And so today, now wait a minute, I'm going to take, in for fairness now, I have a whole big bag of questions here that you've written up. Now, it's obvious that I can't do all the questions that you've asked. So whenever I read a question, I'll read a question, and whoever wrote that question in, stand up and raise your hand so we can point to you, you know? No, I said, wait till I read the question. Now, I'll tell you what this is, you guys. Since all of you write, now let me talk here for a minute before we get deeply involved in the questions. Have any of you ever heard of this place before you came here, the Overseas Press Club? Well, all right. For those of you who haven't, I'll tell you what it is. This is one of the most famous press associations in the world. This was started by the war correspondents that were in World War II, people like Edward R. Murrow and so on. It was started, and all the people who belong to this are connected in a professional way with overseas war reporting. These are all the famous press reporters that worked and live in this building. So we thought it would be great to have it here, because a lot of you kids obviously must be interested in newspapers, and this is about as official a place as you can get in New York as far as papers are concerned. By the way, do I look like I sound? Well, either do you. I had an idea that all of you were taller and skinnier. All right. Okay. All right. Now, here's a question from a girl. First one is from a girl. And by the way, for all of you guys who think that the only people who listen to my show are males, I might point out something that maybe you don't know, that today over 57% of the subscribers to Playboy are girls. Now I don't know whether that says something about Playboy or about girls. I can't tell, but here's a letter from Ray Odesky, it looks like. It's spelled R-A-E, Ray Odesky. And it's from two people, from Ray Odesky and Alan Fromowitz, and they're from Queens College. Where are they? Where are you? They're way out in the back. They're in the back there. All right, here's one of their questions. All right, at ease, I said. Here's one of the questions. It's a pretty good one. It says, do tapes of your shows exist? Well, yes and no. Now, that's a good question. We keep a record of the shows that I do at the station. We keep a tape of every show. And a lot of the shows, which Lee and myself think are better than average or something we want to preserve, we keep. In general, though, if the show is just, you know, it's a show that has to do with something very temporary and very specific on a given night, we will then erase that tape and use it later. But I got a letter here last year from a kid in England, and he made some comment about a story I told, and I was curious, how could this kid in England, because we don't, you know, WR is not heard in England. And I wrote to the kid, and I said, how did you hear? He says, well, he says, there's a kid in Texas. That's right. There's a kid in Texas who has a complete Shepherd lending library. And this kid has he even has a catalog. And he has them filed under all different files, like Schwartz stories, Flick stories, Bruner stories, and he's got a spy who lives over in Brooklyn, and every night this kid in Brooklyn takes my shows and sends them down to this other kid in Texas, who then makes them into little cassettes. And this guy has a worldwide lending library, and kids all over the world listen to stories. In fact, one of the most interesting sidelights I heard of that was a guy that was in jail here recently. He was in an Alabama jail, and he had a complete set of Shepherd tapes, which he would play every night for the guys in the rec hall. He said it was terrible for morale. All right, here's a question from a girl, again, from a paper called The Spirit from Union. What? All right. This question comes from Jeannie and Donna from The Spirit, and she says after, oh, wow, of Union Catholic. And by the way, they're on beautiful Route 22 in Jersey. All of you know that Route 22 is the very essence of slob art in America. In fact, we were debating on whether we should hold this press conference in the flagship. She says, here's her question. What do you think of transparent blouses? Well, I think that should be self-evident. I'm just waiting for transparent miniskirts. Another question. It says, why are you referred to as Ralph in God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash? Well, because that book is really fiction. Now, fiction doesn't mean made up or artificial. In other words, I've taken a lot of stories of things I knew and people I knew and a place I knew and wrote a book about it. But the character Ralph is really not me. He's kind of the essence of all New Yorkers. If you read the book, you know that he lives in this fantastic pad and he's got credit cards and he goes to his favorite French restaurant, yeah, La Miserable du Fried. And he really isn't me. And I thought that it would be very interesting if I used if I contrasted in the book the spirit and the personality of a real New Yorker versus the personality of a typical Midwestern steel mill person like Flick, a bartender. So Ralph really isn't me. So I hope that answers your question. How many of you, may I ask a question of my own here, how many of you read In God We Trust? Well, you know, I want to tell you something, you kids. Now, I'm telling you this as a matter of record. You know that most people, and when I say people, I'm talking about adult reviewers who reviewed the book, missed the point. They thought it was a book that kids wouldn't like. What's that? Well, yeah, I think they are. But you see, I think that they read the book, it's just like most guys, they read the book as if it was reminiscences. Whereas you read the book and you realize it's really about how it feels to be a kid in America and how it feels to send away to Captain Midnight for the secret ring and to come back 3 weeks later and it's made out of plastic and it's busted. All right, now let's go on with the next one. Here's a question. Well, now, this one was not signed, so I really shouldn't use it. I hope that... But we'll be fair, then. We will use it. It says, could you explain the origin of Flick Lives? Well, anybody who has to ask that will never understand. Right, gang? All right, here's one. This was from a paper called the UNIS. U-N-I-S. And I they don't tell where they're from or anything. It just says Eunice. It says, Martha Dean's show is advertised at 10:15. No designation of AM or PM. Can you imagine a listener looking it up and looking for her and then coming up with your show? This is Martha Dean. By the way, Martha Dean happens to be, she's a fascinating gal, and she happens to be one of the hippest people I've ever met in radio. And as a matter of fact, she actually did steal my nose flute. Another question says, will you give another show at Town Hall? We tried to book Town Hall for this past New Year's, but there was a problem due to the fact that if you remember, there was a strike here at the Metropolitan Opera. And for that reason, all the halls in New York were booked like a year in advance. You couldn't even get a booking there. And we were not able to rent Town Hall, but we are making arrangements to try to do a big show in Town Hall this fall. All right, here's another question. Here's from the Andrew Jackson High School Hickory Log. Their question. Now, this may answer a question that a lot of you have asked from time to time. Why did you stop performing at the Limelight? There was a good reason. It really came about at the end. See, I was there for 2 years, you know. Now, wait, come on. Let's be quiet so we can answer this. I was at the Limelight for 2 years, and that meant every Saturday night I had to be there. Of course, it was a live show. And I was getting a lot of invitations from colleges all around the country to perform. And most of the college dates, you know, after all, colleges like your school, they go to school Monday through Friday. And most of their events happen on either Saturday or Sunday night. And I was having to turn down a lot of chances to perform in colleges. And I enjoy working in colleges. In fact, I like performing before college audiences better than any audience that I know of. All right. Here's another question. This is from Roslyn, the Hilltop Beacon. Roslyn, Long Island. By the way, for your information, there are over 300 schools here. It says, you once said that 1970 will be the year of the ego. Would you please explain that statement in greater detail? Well, that's a tough question to answer in a thing like this, but I actually do feel that what's happening in our world is that people are beginning to have a kind of total ego to the point where almost anybody feels that he's qualified to run for a mayor. Practically every 15-year-old kid feels like he's qualified to solve all the political problems of the Middle East. All you got to do is ask him. And I think that the year 1970 is going to see even a greater height of that. You're going to see rock singers will be advising the Treasury Department. And so ultimately, I think that by the end of 1970, you're going to find that the ego will be probably the biggest thing in our day. In fact, the ego is connected with nudity, too. And if you notice that as the growth of nudity goes, so goes the growth of the ego. Here's one from The Eagle's Cry of Bethpage. His question is, how long have you been doing your show on WOR? Well, in the present form, I started on WOR in 1958. Which was just about the time that Abraham Lincoln was going out of office. Here's one from Austin Sears. This is from WKCR-FM. This is a question from a radio station here at Columbia University. By the way, they have a very good radio station there. I've done a lot of shows on the station. And I hope that a lot of you kids that are in high school, when you go into college, you will seriously think of getting involved in the college radio station. Because I think that's one of the most... It's a real gas to play around with a college radio station. I think every kid that I know who's done it, you agree that it really makes it all the way? Any of you guys who work on college stations? Here's a question. What originally started you on a showbiz career? Well, I played high school football, and for those of you who are curious, I was a defensive back. I was a cornerback, defensive. And I was a pass defender is what my real job was. And in my sophomore year, there was a faculty advisor who was connected with a high school radio program that they did every week on a radio station in Chicago. And part of the shows that they did a high school sports cast every weekend about what happened in the high school games. And he came to me and he said, you've got an amateur radio license, right? And I'm a licensed ham. And I said, yeah. I figured he's going to say you're causing interference with my radio. I said, yeah, I'm an amateur. And he said, well, he says, you play football. And I said, yeah. He said, well, how about doing the weekly sports cast? And so every week then I would go on the radio and I would talk about the football games, which we played on Friday night. And one night, I'll never forget one day, it was a good team I played, and we were state champions one year. And I came in to do the high school broadcast, and my arm was in a cast. And I had a big piece of tape over my head where I'd gotten cut the night before. We had gotten beaten that night. And I came on and I said, you know, very straight, I said, Hammond High last night had a very difficult game with the Washington Oilers. And I'm sitting there with this gigantic cast on my head. And it just so happened that the high school choir that was in that day to do the show was from Washington High School. I sat in there with this cast. And that minute, when they all started to laugh, I realized somehow there was something funny about me. I always used to wonder why guards that I played opposite would laugh every time I block them. So that's how I really got into showbiz. And from that time on, I went on and I stayed with it, and I've enjoyed it a lot. Now, here's another question. This is from the... No, that's from the same paper. I don't know why they... Here. This is from the... from Massachusetts. You know, there are some kids all the way down from Massachusetts. This is from Pope John High School, it looks like. Is that... I can't read the typing. He's got it all badly done. It says Pope John High. It says, candidly, what do you think of Rex Reed? I've just said it. What do I think of Raquel Welch? Well, being male, there's only one thing to think about Raquel Welch. It says... Well, it depends on how male you are, if you have to ask, friend. All right, here's another question. It says, is Zinsmeister and the treacherous Ader from Decatur closer to life than you care to admit? No, I think that all my stories are as close to life as I can make them. But that is a very painful story, if you read it. It was a bad night. So, yes, they're largely... based on fact. All my stories are based on fact, but of course what I do is quite often I will take what actually happened, and I'll make it into a form and make it larger than life or smaller than life. That's what's called writing fiction. Here's a question from EBHS. I don't know what high school that is. What is EBHS? East Brunswick? East Brunswick. That's right next to the biggest Great Eastern of them all. That's a very, very scenic part of the country. There's nothing more exciting than driving along through the Route 1 potholes on a Sunday afternoon. It says, are you aware of the large cult following which holds you in godlike awe? You damn right I'm aware of it. And one day I'm going to send out a lightning bolt and destroy them all. Gang, let's rise up now and go down and burn down the city hall. Let's go! can you imagine what Mayor Lindsay would say about this crew? All right. All right, here's one from Ewing High in Trenton. All right, this question says, what changes do you foresee in broadcasting in the future? Boy, that's a loaded question. I think this. Now, I keep vacillating. Sometimes I think that broadcasting in the future will become almost totally bloodless and mechanical. It'll be like one giant mechanical operation, and it'll all be one big tape. And that's a possibility. The other side I see is that, you know, I want to ask you kids something here now, and there are some people here that might be interested in your answer. I believe that since about 1965 or 66, radio has become the medium of the kids. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
And I think that television is something else entirely different. I think that it's something that most people look at once in a while, but it's not where they go for constant day in and day out to know what's really happening. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Well, so I think that in the next 4 or 5 years, you're going to see a lot of people getting into broadcasting. I mean, kids that are coming out of college radio stations and high school radio stations that could very well revolutionize radio. And by 1975, there probably could be 100 Shepherds on the air. I don't mean they'd be imitating me, but I mean using radio for other than simply playing a record or giving you the time. And I think radio's got a fantastic future. And I'd recommend to any kid that wants to get into it, man, you should really stick with it because it's great. How many of you are interested in radio as a career? Would be fascinated by it. Well, there you are, see. And, you know, I think that, and most of you, I know, would not be content just to sit around and play records and give the time. All right. Here's one from Wheatley School. Wheatley School. This is from the Wheatley Wildcat, and it's signed by Todd Glickman and Gary Gottlieb, I believe, from the Wheatley School in Old Westbury, New York. It says, how do you feel about the drug problem? That's a good question. And I'm going to try to give you as best an answer as I can. You know, it would be easy enough for me to become very popular with a lot of you and say, drugs are groovy, turn on, and go all the way. But that, I think, would also be irresponsible. Because I have my own personal, I want you to listen to this. 3 close friends of mine are dead today because of drugs. 3 of them. One died just last year, an overdose. He was a very fine young film director who directed films. How many of you saw a film about 2 years ago by Peter Fonda called The Trip? Well, it was a good film, and this friend of mine directed part of that film. He directed all the psychedelic sequences in it, and he died last year of an overdose. So all I can tell you about drugs is that if anything, come on, kids, get down, please, will you? If anything is as lethal as that, I can't condone the irresponsible attitude that a lot of people have who are, in a sense, recruiting for drugs. I'm talking about rock groups and so on who will assure you that everything is fine. Because, you know, to the day he died, my friend used to tell me that drugs were harmless. And one morning they found him, and that was the end of the ballgame. And I'm just going to tell you that when you start playing with drugs, it is really seriously something you can never go back. You never stop. Less than 10% of heroin addicts ever kick the habit. And you notice you rarely see old drug addicts. They're all considered kids. Well, I want to tell you, most of them are dead. And I can only say to you that if you have to have drugs, if drugs are important to you, well, then you have problems that drugs will never solve. If you have to look for kicks in life that way, I mean chemically, you've got really bad problems, and drugs will not solve them. In fact, drugs often make them worse. Okay? And I'm really serious about this. Go right now and try to get some kind of medical help for it, because the longer you stick with drugs, the less chance you have of ever kicking it, and the more chance you have of dying from it. That's just a word of advice. Thank you. Now, here's another question. This is from Jeff Buck.
from Division Avenue High School in Levittown, New York. He says, why don't you come out to Nassau County? Very simple. I haven't been invited. It says, why don't you do a show at Hofstra University? Well, that brings up a good question. I do shows at universities, as you know. In fact, last week I did one at Newark College of Engineering. I did one at Oneonta. I'm doing one in Princeton in April. But these are all shows. Now, let me answer this. These universities have contacted me and asked me to come and do a show. It's a little ridiculous for me to go to Hofstra and ask them if I can do a show. So if you want me to come to your school, get in touch with your student activities program director, and we can work it out that way. I'm just saying though that I don't go to a school just to say today I'm going to go out to Bayside and go out there. All right, here's one from the Park Ridge, New Jersey Owl. It's the Park Ridge, New Jersey Owl. Is there such a paper? The Partridge Owl. Okay. Here's a question. Representatives are Peter Sala and Fred Weiss who asked this question. Are the stories you tell on the air fictitious or true? Yes. No, they're true stories, but let me say this. I'm a storyteller like say for example Mark Twain. You take a story and I don't want to use the word exaggerated, but it's like making a painting. You bring out the points that you want people to see. When you tell a story, it's not literally true the way I tell it, but it is true in spirit. Does that answer your question? I'm not inventing them. And by the way, there are Flick, Bruner, and Schwartz really do exist. My brother, he's still walking around whining. Here's another question. It says, would you like to be a leader of our country? If so, why? Well, let me say, come on now, there you go. You're starting to get up again, kids. Come on now. The question is, would you like to be a leader of your country? Well, you know, I think today, in 1970, anybody who is in the field of entertainment, and who's serious, you know, I'm not just a banjo player or a disc jockey. Anybody who's in the entertainment field is, in a sense, one of the leaders of the country. Really. Because I'm sure that all of you are here and you want to hear what I have to say, and I think I can influence people on what I do. But to be a leader of the country, you mean to be elected as a leader. I suppose everybody secretly, I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, everybody secretly would like to have the phone ring, you know. Can you imagine the phone rings one day, and you pick it up, and you say, yeah, this phone on the other end of the line, the man says, is this Aki Dildoc? And you say, yeah. He says, Aki, we've been watching your magnificent performance at Park Ridge High School. You're the greatest Park Ridge High School student representative ever had. We want you to come to Washington. We're appointing you senator. Well, everybody secretly would love to be, you know, a Lindsay or some. Well, whatever it is that you happen to think is groovy, that's what everybody secretly would like to be. And I. Well, I think Agnew is one of the greatest deadpan comics of our age. I do. And you know, no, I'm serious. I think I've seen him on television, see, and he really is. I'm talking about as a performer. Agnew has, watch him the next time. He's very deadpan. And he creates great phrases, which is always the hallmark of a stylist. And the reason that people are so mad at Agnew is because he's very good at what he does, which is get people mad. And that's also true of Buckley. Buckley's another one. All right, now let's get on with some other questions here. Now, you're asking me questions. I'm telling you what I think. I had a question, by the way, that somebody asked when I came in, and they said, if you had a chance to do a top television show, would you quit radio to do it? Well, that's not such a theoretical question. I've had that exact opportunity. I've been offered television shows many times. In fact, just recently I was offered a show to take over a top show here in town in New York. It's a network show, on the condition that I give up radio. I would say no, because I think what I do on radio is highly unique, because I don't have to listen to editors, or I don't have to worry about whether the cameramen are getting the right angle. And radio is an extremely personal medium. I would like to do a good top television show and keep my radio show. But if I had to give up my radio show to do it, no. Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
All right, now, come on, sit down, you guys, again. There, you're sneaking up again. All right, here's a question. All right, here's one. Now, here's a good question. I'm sure a lot of you thought about this. What problems and troubles, if any, have arisen from both the audience and the station management due to anything that you have said or done on your show? Well, I'll tell you, in my case, and I'm not trying to speak for anybody else, I'm telling you in my case, and I'm going to give it to you very straight. In all the years I've been at WOR, I have never once, in spite of the fact that you hear me kid a great deal about it, I have never once been told what to say and what not to say. Never once have I been censored on the radio. As far as the audience is concerned, it even works even better than that. Many times the audience will write in, I'll get very angry letters from the audience. The station invariably takes the stand when they get an angry letter. They simply write back to the guy and say, too bad, that's what you've got a knob on your radio for, friend. That Mr. Shepherd is a professional. He does what he does the way he wants to do it. We back him up in it. And many, many people like what he does. So I've never had any trouble with censorship or with any of the problems that you constantly hear about in the air. And I'm going to say one more thing about that. I think that's highly overrated. I think that many a performer, when he's in trouble, in other words, when his audience begins to decline, he then uses that issue to the public. He gets publicity that way. He charges that they're censoring him. And as immediately you get headlines in the Post and in the Realist and everything else for that. What really is the case is the guy's show is failing. And I haven't seen much in the way of censorship in radio. Barry Farber, for example, has a lot of very controversial people on the show who use often very controversial language. I've never heard Barry get censored. So I think the whole censorship issue is... Martha Dean? Listen, Martha Dean's going to do the censoring, if anything. No. I've just never heard anybody on the station get censored. I'm just telling you that for straight dope. Now, you can believe it or not, I'm telling you that I'm giving you the answer. Now, here's another one. It says, when did you start playing the Jew's harp? You want to hear about that? Well, I started to play the Jew's harp when I was about 5 years old. You want to see my Jew's harp? All right. All right, now sit down. Hold it. All right, now wait. Now, if you guys are quiet, I'll show you. Now, come on, kids. Sit down back there now. Come on, please. Now, you see, this is a carrier. This is what I use to carry a Jew's harp. It's a little wooden carrier with a slot in it. The Jew's harps fit thusly. This is the way musicians carry their Jew's harps. Now the Jew's harps that I'm... Now, let me tell you. I'll answer all the questions about it. The Jew's harps that I play are not obtainable in this country. Now, immediately, a lot of you kids are going to say, well, I went down and I bought a Jew's harp and it didn't sound like your Jew's harp, right? Well, that's because the Jew's harps that you buy in this country are toys. They're just little Woolworth-type things, you know? This Jew's harp is the one that you generally hear me play on the air. Now, let me talk about it first. It is an English Jew's harp. It's called a Smith. It was made by a man named Smith. Unfortunately, he is now dead, and they don't make them any longer. This is quite a collector's item. A Jew's harp like this would cost between $40 and $70 today, if you could get it. Can you hear me on the PA system? All right, now listen to the sound of it. Now, be quiet, and all of you listen carefully, and don't anybody try to be funny and start playing his dinosaur Jew's harp with me. No, I want you to really hear this thing, because it's a beautiful instrument. Listen. How you like that? Now let me finish here. This Jew's harp here, this is a different type. That was an English Jew's harp. Now this one, which is a smaller one and is a very different type, is made in Austria. And they've been making these, the family that makes these, have been making these Jew's harps now for over 300 years. And the only place in the world you can get this type is right there. Listen to the sound of this one. It's a very different sound. Listen. That's an Austrian Jew's harp. By the way, when I do my show, if any of you kids are coming down to the show at Princeton, I'm going to do a show at Princeton, I'm bringing a jug band to Princeton. Wasn't that a great show? And I'm going to do a lot of Jew's harp stuff and a lot of cop spieling and everything there that night. All right, here's at ease. Here's a question from Mount Pleasant Junior High of Livingston, New Jersey. Dear Shep, are you an a faith snob? Yes. Am I an a faith snob? Well, I don't know exactly what an a faith snob is. I always have thought of an a faith snob as William Buckley. You know, and maybe a little touch of Rex Reed. You know, the one that says, "My God, you mean you still go to see Italian movies?" That's to me is a true a faith snob. I don't know whether I qualify. Shepherd, are you a comedian? Well, that you're right. That's the best joke that's been asked today. I don't know. You know, I can't say what I am. I think it's up to people who listen to you to decide. You know, we're so hung on labels today that people don't feel right about it unless they do tag a label to you. And did you notice that the New York Times, referred to me as a disc jockey? The next question is, are you a conformist? Well, that's a ridiculous question. First of all, I don't think anybody is a conformist. I think everybody just merely does what he happens to like doing, and it just so happens that most people like to do the same things that other people like to do. I don't think many people say to himself, "I think I'm going to do exactly what Big Charlie does, and then proceed to imitate Charlie." I don't think there's such a thing as a conformist. It says, "Are you a hippie?" I suppose. I've been described as a lot of things. I think that any description like this would have to come from people who are doing the describing. That's why I took this question. It says, is Gene Shepherd your real name? Yes, it is. In fact, it's a French name, as you know. J-E-A-N is French. And I was named after my father, whose name is also Gene Shepherd. Here's a note from Sleepy Hollow High School, from a guy named Savory Moore at Sleepy Hollow High. He says, what happened to your race to become king of New York? Well, we're going to start that. You know, come on, now you're standing up again. Sit down. Sit down. Come on. There she goes. All right. I am writing a manifesto about how I want to become king of New York, and it will appear in Playboy magazine. We're getting a magnificent tapestry weaver. I don't think a king is worth a damn unless he's got a tremendous tapestry of him shown hunting, riding to the hounds. Do you agree? And so we're having a tapestry weaver do the illustration for the manifesto, which will appear in Playboy. The manifesto which finally declares that New York is and shall become a monarchy. And that we're going to bring back all kinds of things. We're going to bring back public beheadings. Which, by the way, would be very interesting. We're going to have them in Times Square. All right. Here's a question. Which character are you in Jack Kerouac's On the Road? Well, there was a character in Jack Kerouac. I knew Kerouac at the time that the book came out, and a lot of us were hanging around the village. I knew a lot of the people who were in that book in one way or another, guys like Gregory Corso, Allen Ginsberg, that whole crew. We're all friends. I've known them for a long time. People like Paul Krasner and so on. And the character of the angel-headed hippie, did you ever read On the Road? Well, that's the character that is roughly based on me. It's very rough. It says, what happened to your mother's rump-sprung Chinese red chenille bathrobe? Well, you know, that's a funny story. When my book came out in Godly Trust, I went back home. My mother lives in Hammond. And I went back home to see her, and I said, how did you like the book, Ma? And she said, well, it was very good. I said, was that all you could say? It took me 3 years to write it, Ma. How was it? I said, well, all right, what's bugging you? Why didn't you like it? She said, my bathrobe wasn't that bad. She said, that was a nice bathrobe. I said, well, Ma, you got to admit, it was rump sprung. She said, well, I sit down in it a lot. So all I can say is that there is a rump-sprung Chinese red chenille bathrobe, and it does have a petrified egg yolk on a lapel. And she does still wear it. It says, we couldn't find Homond, Indiana in the Atlas. No, because the name of the town in the book is Homond, Indiana. Now, the reason this is so is because that town that is in the book does not really exist that way. I took three towns, Gary, Hammond, and a town named East Chicago, and I put them all in one town, which I named Homond. It's a typical, in other words, it's a composite town. It's a composite town of northern Indiana steel mill towns. Cedar Lake is just south of Hammond, Indiana, by 26 miles. It's near a town called, the town is Lake Town, Indiana. It's right south of Hammond. Okay, does that answer that question? Now, here's another question. I'm just pulling them out at random. I'm trying to be very fair. Here's one that, here's one from the Crimson Crier of Fairlawn, New Jersey. And it says, the question is, who is the biggest slob you ever met besides yourself? I'll tell you, that's a hard question to answer. I think that we meet a big slob every 10 minutes in our life. And I can only say that the biggest slob I ever met was the one that I met 12 minutes ago. Here's one. It says, here's a question from Bay Ridge High School. Is there a Bay Ridge High School here? I don't know. It says, when does T.S. Mack come out? Well, that was the original title of my book, which is, the title's been changed, and it will be out this fall. Here's a series of questions from Lewis High School, The Patriot. Well, this was not a question. It's a whole poem, so that goes out. Here's another one. Let's see. Some bad questions here. Here's a question from Far Rockaway High School. It says, what was the real motive behind canceling the broadcast from Limelight? Well, I've already told you that. The motive was I wish to go out and do college dates on Saturday night. No, that's right. Here's one from the Leonian, from Natalie Lichtenstein, girl reporter. From the Leonian, I guess that's Leonia High School, says, where did you go to college? I went to University of Indiana. I attended the University of Maryland. I attended Northwestern, the University of Chicago, and Rollins College. I majored in psychology. It says, Shepard, for God's sakes, what happened to the 1970 Shepard? Already it's gone downhill. All I can say to that is that 1970's gone downhill already. Here's another question. Here's one that says, why does your show not come on earlier? Well, all right. This is some guy from a paper called The Touchstone. He doesn't tell what school it is. It's The Touchstone. And I can say that we found out that most people, you know, it's funny, when I used to be on, you remember when I was on from 11:15 to midnight? Well, a lot of kids, we were getting thousands of letters from angry teachers who said that these kids are coming to school the next day, you know, and they've been listening to the radio till midnight, and then they come dragging into a class at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's bad news. And so, actually, that's the reason why we moved the show up from midnight to 10:15 to 11, and we found that most people have a better chance of hearing it at that hour. Do you agree? Okay. When is it on in Boston? My show is on in Boston on WGBH television. What's that? Well, that's a different station. We don't have anything to do with that. They can put it on any time they want that. And that's a good time for Boston. That's a late town. People in Boston stay up a lot later than they do in New York because they got more to worry about. Here's one from Clifton High School. Now, this was nice. All it is a letter that says, I'd like to compliment the crew who planned this fiasco, considering the choice of room size and so on, not that it's uncomfortable. Well, I want to tell you this, that if for those of you who wondered why we're holding it in a place where obviously we don't have enough room for all of you, that the response to this was much more than we thought it would be. That when I first announced on the air that we're going to have a press conference, well, we figured we'd get maybe 25 or 30 schools. Well, I'm serious. We didn't know, you know. And so, anyway, it wound up with this many. But in the meantime, we had already decided to have it at the Overseas Press Club, which I think is a pretty groovy place to be anyway. We could go out and rent an ordinary-type auditorium. It wouldn't be nearly this exciting. And I'm serious. Do you agree that it's very interesting to be here in the Overseas Press Club? All right, I'll tell you. You know who spoke here this very afternoon? This is where Pompidou spoke this afternoon. By George, here's another group of experts on Middle European. Here's one from the John Brown Observer. The John Brown Observer. It says, is Hugh Hefner the type of boy, well, he's not a boy to begin with, is Hugh Hefner the type of boy that I could bring home to my mother? Well, since you sign your name Seth Siegel, I would say no. Not unless your mother's a hell of a lot more broad-minded than I suspect she might be. But no, Hefner, if you're any of you ever knew Hefner, you would, first of all, he's a very ordinary guy, and he is. He's quite different from what most people think of him, and I think he's got a good sense of humor, and he delights, he really enjoys when people write anti-Hugh Hefner pieces. You know, he collects these. He's got great notebooks of anti-Hefner films and all that stuff. And I think, he's all right. I think he's okay. Here's a question. Oh, well, it's the same question. It says, where can I get a first-rate Australian Jew's harp? Well, I suspect in Sydney. I've never heard of an Australian Jew's harp, but I suspect you may get one out there. I don't know. Here's one from the Argus. New York Prep. Where's New York Prep? Okay. Is that Manhattan? Manhattan. New York Prep. The Argus. It says, why isn't your television show seen or broadcast in the metropolitan area? Well, that's a good question. I do a television show, which is a daily show on a station in Boston, and it's very popular there in Boston. But the reason that it's not broadcast here in New York is that it is on an educational channel in Boston. It's on Channel 2. NET is not connected with them. Educational channels are separate from each other. In other words, mine is done for the station in Boston that is operated by Harvard University. It's the one that originates the Julia Child show. Perhaps one day my show may be on in New York, but I don't promise it. It's right now in Boston. All right. Here's a letter from the chat of Far Rockaway High School. The editor is Bruce Siftel. He says, you repeatedly accuse journalists of coining terms that have no real meaning, such as chatter jockey. The nature of a word is a sound that transfers meaning. The Philadelphia... Well, he's not asking a question. He's just giving me a lecture. He claims that chatter jockey is a legitimate phrase. I say no. Chatter jockey is a phrase that relates... First of all, the word chatter is a downgrading word. Chatter means nonsensical talk, just chatter. When you say he just stood around the corner and chattered. Well, you could hardly say that Walter Lippmann is chattering about the news. You would not refer to Bill Cosby's work as a nightclub chatter. Why not? Well, he's just talking. And I say that terms like chatter jockey and that kind of term, when they're applied to my work, I take umbrage at them because I feel that they're a form of put-down. I also feel that they don't really have any meaning. A chatter jockey really refers to a disc jockey who doesn't play records. Well, that's, first of all, a nonsensical idea in itself, because a disc jockey does play records or he wouldn't be a disc jockey. So there can't be any such thing as a disc jockey who doesn't play records. In short, it's a nonsensical non-word. And by the way, I have never coined a non-word, for those of you who are interested in that. All right, how about one more question? Here's one from Yeshiva University High School. Here's his question. He says, what do you think of the movie ratings? Well, I think they're kind of ridiculous. I think they're generally the reverse. Every movie that I've seen that says adult rating, adult only, is usually so simple-minded, it's like a stag movie at American Legion. And to me, I think the movie rating system is rather silly. I don't like people to rate the stuff that I see, and I don't think anybody else does. Do you? Well, all right. Have you had a good time at this question and answer period? All right. Thank you, and let's adjourn.
Well, there you have it. That was the press conference. In case you wondered what you were listening to all this time, if you tuned in out late, that was a press conference that we had with about 600 high school editors, reporters, etc., from high school papers all over the East.